if you suddenly don't see me, it means I have fainted and I'm somewhere on the floor over here. I did not know that my legs were going to give out when I got up here. And I'm serious. I'm like, whoa, why can't I feel my legs? I am just blown away that I am given this opportunity. The International Convention means more to me than it's made my sobriety, the quality of my sobriety, just meeting people from all over the world and knowing that we suffer from a common problem and that together we can do what we were never able to do alone, and certainly this alcoholic was not able to do alone. My sobriety date is, did I say I'm Suzanne and I am an alcoholic? Thank you. Little detail. My sobriety date is July 8th, 1987, and my home group is the Women's Whittier Acceptance Group in Los Angeles County. Yeah. So what I want to tell you is what it was like, briefly, what it began to become like, and the freedom that I feel today. And I tell you that because my relationship with God when I got to AA was, I don't need to read steps two, and anything else that has to do with God, because I've got that figured out. I was raised in a Catholic home, and I just had no idea of what was possible in a relationship with a higher power. I had zero idea, and so my relationship was maybe this big, and so therefore I could skip over step two completely, and we're just going to move on. But what happened is, for me, somewhere in step three, I started to tumble a lot, and it hurt, and there wasn't really a roomy relationship with a higher power to help me with those tumbles in step three, and especially in step four. And so it was recommended to me that I might need to go back and spend some time and hang out in step two for a while, and understand about how much room there was for me to grow in that area. And that if I certainly wanted a ceiling in my connection with a higher power, I was welcome to keep that ceiling as low as I wanted it. But perhaps there was an easier, softer way. And that came with surrender. I came into the rooms when I was 13, and before I even picked up I started drinking when I was 13. Again, a minor detail. When I started drinking, I was already filled with shame, and I drank at the time, Only the Good Die Young was one of the biggest songs on the radio, and I lived it like an anthem, and I remember apologizing to God when I would plan my drink or my drunk, that I can't help it. And I didn't know that meant I had a disease. I just knew that I couldn't help it. And this path of being a good Catholic girl wasn't working for me. And I would cry over that. I didn't know how to not behave the way I was behaving. But I know what I would brought into drinking was my shame and guilt for things that had happened to me and things that I had done already before picking up a drink. So when alcohol did come into my body, I had to run further and further away and continue to disconnect with myself. And we all know how I did that and all the ways that I don't need to get into that. This is about varieties of spiritual experience. So when I got to the rooms at age 23, as I mentioned, I didn't need step two. But some things had happened that, in my understanding of a higher power at that time, would mean that I was going to be damned to eternal hell. And so why don't I just kill myself in sobriety? Because what's the point? I'm not going to be forgiven anyway. So that was when I talk about that narrow view was based on what I had thought I heard as a kid. A loving God was not what I was familiar with. And I don't point fingers. It was just my perception of what I heard. And so it was hard in early sobriety. I will tell you, and I don't say it proudly, that I wanted to kill myself for the first 5 years of sobriety. And I want to thank my friends in Queens County, New York, for helping me not do that a day at a time. That's where I started my journey. And when I got to, this is kind of funny, I got into my somewhere between 10 and 20 years. If anybody's experienced, all your old stuff comes up again. You might have done a fourth step, but you get to refeel it at a whole new level, stuff that you've never quite felt before. And what I found out is I was really, really angry. And what I didn't know is I was angry at God. I had no idea that was what was brewing underneath. And so around I guess, about 5 years ago, just after the international convention, I had the blessing to go to India. And I went to India to run away from Jesus, because thank God they don't have Jesus in India. And when I got there, the biggest picture on their altar was Jesus, right in the center. And I tell you this not as a joke, and my husband can attest to this. I was really, really angry now. I mean, I paid a lot of money to go to India to get away from Jesus, and he's right in the middle. So it was suggested I might have some issues to work on. And I got to work with that, and what I found out is, you know, whatever form of a higher power that I chose, I was still making him the bad guy who did these things to me. You know, so what was phenomenal, it was in a much more thorough fourth step where you really work your butt off on that fourth column, thank you, Colleen, is where you get to experience my part. What was my part? So when I was raped, what was my part? And that was really hard. So when I got to India, that was my question. When someone suggested to me that I might have a part in my rape, I was beyond angry at this person too for suggesting such a thing. And so what I was told is, it's not how did you carry your body that day. That's not what we're talking about. What have you done since that day to continue to hate God? What have you done since that day to continue to be in anger and in rage and point the finger? And so that started to make sense to me. And another blessing today, and a curse then, was having been a battered woman. That was my other grudge list with God. So I had a long, you know, people have resentment lists. My God resentment list was really, really long. And having been a battered woman, I also, what was my part in that? What was my part? And that's what I got to look at. And there was an evolution in my relationship with a higher power that, well, this is what happened. And some of you may recognize these words. They're certainly not mine. To us, the realm of spirit is broad, roomy, all-inclusive, never exclusive or forbidding to those who earnestly seek. And for me, I started to realize that my God was absolutely wild about me. And what I also found out is it didn't, for me, for this alcoholic right here, it didn't matter what I chose to call God. It just mattered that I called God in some way, shape, or form. And if it was God through the work that I and the blessings that I get from the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, that was okay. And if it was, you know, a God that I kneel down to and pray a certain prayer to, that was okay. I wasn't going to have to answer. That's just my experience. And that just gave me so much freedom, because as I said, when I came in, I'm telling you, I thought at 13 years old when I started drinking, like, well, God, you've already said that I'm going to hell based on what I've been told. So I'm sorry you and I can't hang out anymore. And I was really, really upset at 13 years old because I was wild about God, but I thought my sins were too great that I could never be forgiven. And so what I found out, and I remember, another part of my sobriety was living on Long Island, and I remember a particular meeting in St. Peter's in Bayshore. And I was sitting up there, and I suddenly felt myself in the armchair, the most comfortable armchair, but it wasn't. The seat was an ordinary AA seat, but the seat I was sitting felt like the most comfortable armchair I've ever sat in, and I realized those were the arms of God that I was sitting in that seat. And so today what I know about my relationship with God is my God is so crazy about me. He's got a picture of me on his refrigerator. And I really, really like that. And what's been amazing has been, this trips me out. I mean, seriously, I'm pretty woo-woo at times. But what trips me out is the constant communication that I have with a higher power. I mean, it's really like, don't turn left, turn right. I mean, it's all the time now. It's remarkable. However, it doesn't happen when I'm in my disease. And you know, no matter how much time we have, whether a day or 20 or 30, 40, 50 years, we have those days where we're not listening. You know, I mean, to the point where sometimes we're still, la, 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 I can't hear you. Sometimes I still do that. But when I am, you know, be still and know that I am God, that's when I connect. But I stop putting a label on it. And I wanted to make sure that I connected with it. If anybody doesn't know this book or hasn't had the chance, this is The Language of the Heart. It's a collection of Bill W.'s writings from the grapevine. Just if you're confused or just not sure where you fit, I think that you might find something that Bill's written in here that just blows me away. So Bill is talking about the process of prayer and meditation. And he says, this is some of the benefits that he talked about. He begins to add up the results. If he persists, he will almost surely find more serenity, more tolerance, less fear, less anger. He will acquire a quiet courage, the kind that doesn't strain him. Man, I like that, the kind that doesn't strain him. He can look at so-called failure and success for what they really are. Problems and calamity will begin to mean instruction instead of destruction. He will feel freer and saner. The idea that he may have been hypnotizing himself by auto-suggestion will become laughable, which Bill Wilson is amazing. His sense of purpose and of direction will increase. His tensions and anxieties will commence to fade. His physical health is likely to improve. Wonderful and unaccountable things will start to happen. Twisted relations in his family and on the outside will unaccountably improve. So what I want to close with is in terms of, well, it's kind of like God can do for you what you cannot do for yourself. This April, I had the chance to go home. I'm a New Yorker, Queens girl, born and raised. I got to go home to visit my brother for his birthday. And one of the benefits of that is I got to go to lunch with somebody I've had resentments with since I was really little. Angry, really, really angry. And the grace of God just washed over me. I sat across from this beautiful lady at lunch, and suddenly there was no more anger. There was no resentment. And my poor sister, she must have done her eighth step with me a dozen times for all the things that she felt she had done to me. And I'd nod my head and say thank you, and I would bite my lip, and I would be, yeah, whatever. Like, I still was shut down. And I may never in my life know what that moment was that made me so mad, you know? But what I know today in AA is who cares? So I looked at my sister, and I had tears in my eyes, and I said, I love you so much. And I'm so glad you're my sister. And so my sister is here at this convention. She helped pave the way for me to be here. And I couldn't have done that because I supposedly tried, but whatever I was trying wasn't really working. And so when I think about varieties of spiritual experience, I want you to know that I tried really hard. And it seems to me when I try really, really, really hard, it's when I miss the mark, like, completely. It's somehow when I surrender and be still and listen, I find out there's just this magical, limitless possibility of connection that will help really just puts everything in place in ways that I didn't think was possible. So when I saw my sister, she still lives there, and I'm on the West Coast now, I saw her and I just felt love. And that's amazing because it wasn't like that. Like, immediately I would go into the story, and again, I don't know why, but it was there. And the last thing I want to share is, so as I mentioned, in 2010 or 11, I got to go to India with my husband, and today my husband asked me how he could help me relax about speaking in front of a couple of people today. And so we sat down on the floor of the hotel room, and we did a meditation together, and he prayed with me and for me. And I know there's a lot of people in the room today that are just praying for me and just telling me, Suzanne, just be who you are. Just be who you are. That's enough. And Alcoholics Anonymous helped me to be just enough, and that I can hold my head up and I don't have to account for. Oh, I got one more really good story I just remembered. So the arrogant, and I know I've got time because I'm timing myself. The arrogance of this alcoholic. I had done my first fourth step, and I had gone in. I was living in Massachusetts at the time, and I went in to see the priest, and I had my list, you know, my shame list to share with him. And I started giving him my shame list, and his response to me, this Catholic priest, was angry. He was angry at me. He said, "How dare you judge yourself more harshly than God would? Who do you think you are?" And I at the time, you have to understand, I didn't have much sobriety. My response to that in my head was, obviously he doesn't know how bad I really am, right? So the great news today is I know how, am I going to say it? I know how great I am, but I am great because of Alcoholics Anonymous and nothing more. So thank you so much for my sobriety.
Aloha, beautiful people.
Aloha.
My name is Renan, and I am an alcoholic. Happy Hour on Maui is my home group. December 26, 1988 is my sobriety date. And I would like to, first of all, thank all the people who had put this together. It's amazing. I'd like to thank the people in GSO. I'd like to thank Eva Sanchez for asking me. It's a great honor and privilege to be here. And what I'm sharing today is going to be about my spiritual experiences as well. So it's beyond the realm of what's usually talked about in AA meetings. So the sharing you'll hear today will be different from any sharing I've ever done from a podium in Alcoholics Anonymous. And what I'd really like to share with you is that Alcoholics Anonymous has opened up a whole new world of opportunities for me and given me a new life in sobriety, sometimes traveling around the world. But more than that, my spiritual life has opened up. My heart has opened up, and my spirit has opened up. I want to read the appendix, if you'll be with me, from Spiritual Experience from Alcoholics Anonymous. The term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon careful reading shows the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of a sudden and spectacular upheaval. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of this difference before he is himself. He finally realizes he has undergone a profound altercation in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected source of strength, which they presently identify among their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of a spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. And I wanted to share with you, I'm going to share about my spiritual experiences, and I do hear voices, and I do see things, and I'm not on medication. Okay. And in the appendix, it talks about having a psychic rearrangement. in order to stay sober. And I have had that rearrangement. God has rearranged me, and he's rearranged me again and continues to rearrange me. When I came into Alcoholics, I was one of those people who sat on their hands. My hands shook really, really badly, and I kept them in my pockets. I started drinking at age 16 and crossed the line from cucumber to pickle along the way. By 1982, I was drinking vodka for breakfast and couldn't stop. I'd like to say that my first spiritual experience of many was one day I looked down and my hands weren't shaking. That was a spiritual experience. I stayed sober and didn't drink for 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, 1 year. That is a spiritual experience. I hit my bottom when I was working as an undercover narcotics officer. A wonderful job for an alcoholic. Wonderful. I was lying to everyone I met. And being an AA and working the steps, I began to develop integrity. I live my life with integrity, and that's a spiritual experience. I feel clean inside. I can look anyone in the face without regret or guilt, and that is a spiritual experience. I've been challenged to do things in AA I thought I couldn't do. I was elected as delegate from Area 17 and got to be a part of the General Service Conference in New York. And that was a spiritual experience. I'd like to shift gears a bit and directly talk about some of my spiritual experiences in sobriety. I have experienced ecstasy without the drug ecstasy and bliss states. And why not? All of us have experienced the hell realms, but the bliss states and the heavenly states are real too. I had always been a joiner, and I joined several spiritual groups and a political cult. When I got sober, I had to face my whole life. During my drinking, my son was murdered. I survived my drinking. My son did not. So one of the groups I joined was the People's Temple and went to Jonestown, Guyana. That was one of Vernon's great ideas to get sober. I left Jonestown on November 18, 1978, and was shot 3 times and left for dead. Congressman Ryan was murdered as he was helping me escape. That is where my drinking took me. My son was murdered from laying in the jungle, dying, to standing here before you, and I am alive, and that is the spiritual experience. Yeah. 912 people died there, and I lived. I've had AIDS, HIV for 33 years. I've lost countless friends and 2 partners from AIDS, and I'm still standing here today. And you've helped me walk through these losses, and God, the rock on which I stand, and this loving fellowship were there, and that was a spiritual experience. People I thought didn't give a crap about me were there at the memorial services, and they did care. And I have survived my alcoholism, my drug addiction, from laying in the jungle to serving at the General Service Conference is quite a spiritual experience. In fact, listening to all those fifth steps of men and women who trusted me and honored me would share their deepest, darkest secrets, that is a spiritual experience. When I got sober in 1982, I attempted to get sober. I joined a spiritual group in San Francisco, and about 25 of us moved to Maui and lived in an ashram working for our spiritual lessons. One of the things that that spiritual group told me was that I had been healed of alcoholism. I was no longer an alcoholic, so I drank. And I drank for 5 more years. I had the pattern of abdicating responsibility of my life to a highly structured group to curb my drinking. When my spiritual community imploded over money, property, and prestige, I went into free fall drinking. I joined the police department in 1986 and recently retired after 27 years of service. Having a career in law enforcement that I loved was a gift of this program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'd like to tell you one short story. I hope I have time. Before I got sober, if I saw a DUI checkpoint, I did a quick U-turn and put pedal to the metal and got away as soon as possible. When I became an officer, my first DUI checkpoint that I was conducting, the very first car I pulled over was driven by my sponsor, David, with his wife in the front seat. They had not been drinking. My spiritual experiences in the past were varied. It was normal to speak with others on other dimensions through trance mediums. I always sought the high of spiritual altered states, just as we alcoholics sought the altered states that alcohol brought us. Bill W. had a white light experience, and so have I. This is a part of my spiritual life, a deep, rich life. The 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous are my foundation. When I was drinking, I wanted to be a spiritual person. And I was a spiritual person, a very spiritual person, but a very drunk spiritual person. And there was a lot of things that I wanted to do, and I couldn't do because I was drunk. When I came into the program in 1987, my sponsor told me to shit can my old god, the god of my parents. Well, my parents were atheists, but I had a lot of old ideas. I had a lot of old ideas, stocked on old ideas from different spiritual groups I had joined, their doctrines, their dogmas, their rules, their roles, their regulations, their precepts, their belief systems. So I had a lot to let go of. To thine own self be true was emphasized, getting sober. But I didn't know who I was. Finding out who I am, being authentic, being real, and being real wherever I am, and honest about who I am, is a spiritual experience. When I got sober, I began to work the steps, and I was afraid of drinking, and I was digging for the mother lode so I could be free. I was in such psychic pain, I sought all forms of healing and spirituality. I went to the Philippines and experienced the psychic surgeons, being shaken by spirit to break the stones around my heart. I have been to the top of the mountain, as they say. I have experienced ecstasy and bliss. I have experienced, seen, and felt the oneness of all beings. In sobriety, I have a new life, and that life, my spirit came alive. In sobriety, my heart opened and continues to open. I'm a practicing Wiccan Buddhist and a student of shamanic studies. I journey to other realms. I pray. I meditate. Then about 1.5 years ago, I had a vision. Jesus came to me in this vision. He put his hands on my heart. I had sought 30 years to forgive myself for my part in my son's death. I had forgiven Jim Jones. I had forgiven the person who tried to kill me, but I couldn't forgive myself. He healed my heart. I was filled with light and love that I'd never experienced. That love permeated my whole being. I thought, why me? I'm not even a Christian. I'm a Wiccan, a Buddhist, a shaman. What could I say to Jesus? Could you go back and sin like Krishna or Buddha or somebody? And I have been touched by Christ's consciousness, and I'll never be the same. What was revealed to me that a spirit is greater than the human finite mind. It's greater than any denomination, religion, circumstance, labels, categories, or boxes. My sobriety, my spiritual life is deep and rich. I have my spirit guides that are with me, my cheerleaders from the other side. I feel like I walk with Jesus on one side and Archangel Michael on the other. I still practice Wicca, write rituals that I have the honor to perform in my Wiccan circles. I still journey in my shamanic circles. Jesus still comes to me in visions. He tells me that the day when I leave this earth will be a happy day. He says, I will come and bring you home. I have lost my fear of death. I have shared many deeply personal varieties of spiritual experiences with you. There is so much more to life than I ever knew. I live in a grateful heart. All of this would never have been available to me without Alcoholics Anonymous. In closing, I would like to say the next time you hear someone say, "Oh, that's so airy-fairy," maybe it's not. Maybe it's really an essential part of life, an essential part of that piece of the puzzle. And I'd like to thank you again for being my family. And mahalo nui loa.
I'm Mimi, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
My sobriety date is September 17th, 1998. And I think I'm having a spiritual experience now. A little bit nervous. But I'd like to thank the convention for inviting me and letting me share the stage with these two wonderful speakers. When I got the email about speaking, I thought, man, they must really be desperate for speakers. For me, my spiritual experiences, because I've had several in Alcoholics Anonymous, they've all been brought about as a result of the 12 steps. When I got sober, I was 18 years old. I'd been in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous for a long time, and I'd come out of the state hospital where I was the only person committed and not medicated because my doctor said, "I'm just an alcoholic." And I didn't know if that was good or bad, but... But today I know that it's good, and today I know that being an alcoholic has been the best thing that ever happened to me, and I'm so, so grateful for that. When I got sober, I was an atheist, and my sponsor said, "We're going to go through the steps very, very quickly," and she took me through the steps about a step a day. And we got to step two. She said, "Okay, you have to come up with something." And I said, "Oh, no, because I'm an atheist. I don't believe in God." And she said, "No, you have to." So I came up with this higher power, and I named him Sydney. And after Sid Vicious... He drove a cab, he was good at math, and he loved me. And I'd never felt any kind of love before I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I grew up in a very cold home. I was raised by two psychopaths. Those aren't my words, those are the therapist's words. And it was a very dark place, and I didn't believe in God. The world felt empty, and it wasn't until I got to Alcoholics Anonymous and I felt the love here and the warmth that I began to believe that maybe there was something in this thing for me. But I didn't want it to be a higher power. I wanted anything but that, because I like the idea that I can control my life and I know what I'm doing. And for me, sobriety and my spiritual experiences and my spiritual journey, they haven't been linear. I mean, it's like I take three steps forward and I take two steps back, and I struggle, and some days I whine, and some days I'm happy, and some days it feels great, and some days I say, "God, I don't know what you're doing." "Really? You thought this was a good idea? And what were you thinking?" And I like to play God. And so for me, every day I wake up with the struggle of, am I going to surrender? You know, I get to start my surrender all day, every day, all over again. And one of the biggest gifts that I've had in sobriety has been that people in Alcoholics Anonymous have just let me be. They've said, "It's going to be okay, Mimi. Keep coming back, because there's room for you here. There's room for you to question and to wonder and to not know what's going on." When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was the survivor of a cult ritualistic abuse and torture. And I didn't know how to integrate the idea of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of this loving higher power with the past. And I thought, how is it that my higher power can be kind and loving and all of these things happened? And it's taken a long time. It's taken lots of inventories and lots of prayers and lots of meditation and sharing honestly in meetings and picking up the phone and calling my sponsor. And I would call my sponsor, and my sponsor would say, "Do this, go be of service. You know, go write an inventory." And I think, but I don't get how that is going to help me connect with God. I thought that I had to levitate or float. I was going to get banged in the head or, you know, knocked out by the spirit. And that hasn't happened for me. That hasn't been my experience. I've had some amazing experiences in Alcoholics Anonymous. When I got sober, I made amends to my family. And one of those people that I made amends to was my mother, who was schizophrenic, severely mentally ill, but also sober. And when I was living in a residential treatment center, because I had I had become extremely suicidal and homicidal. That's where my alcoholism took me. She would come and get on the bus afraid every day, and she would ride the bus, and she'd come visit me, and I was so cruel to her. And she had tried carrying the message to me of Alcoholics Anonymous, and she just loved me from a distance. And when I got sober, because of her mental illness, she could not hear. She couldn't hear my amends. And she began being cared for by some of the people in my family who weren't safe. And the sponsor that I had at the time said, you can't have contact with your mother because it's not physically safe for you. So I spent about 8 years not talking to, speaking with my mother, thinking of her often, and feeling guilty. And a few years ago, my mother died, and it was unexpected. I have an aunt who moved to Chile to get away from my family. And she called me, and she said, Mimi, your mom's died. And I immediately went into a place of guilt and shame. And up until that point, I had been meditating every day. Things had been going all right. Things had been going well. I'd finally built this relationship with Sydney, had become God. You know, it's been, now I think I had about 13 years of sobriety, and I felt good. And I didn't know how I was going to get past this. A few weeks later, the sponsee committed suicide. She didn't want to look at her family of origin issues, and I just couldn't make a connection with God. And I got a new sponsor because I kept changing sponsors. It wasn't them, it was me. I couldn't get it. I couldn't connect in my heart. Because that's what these steps are really all about, right? That's what having a spiritual experience is all about. It's not just about me not drinking anymore, although that's important. It's about getting in my heart, because I wake up and I'm in my head. It's like a shotgun. Bang, it went off, and I'm ready to go with my day, and I've forgotten about God. And so for me, the challenge is always getting back here, getting to where I can listen to what's happening inside. So I had a friend who had sponsored me years ago. His name is Mark C. Some of you know him. He's a really cool guy. And when he sort of first started sponsoring me, I would call him about 14 times a day when I had about a year of sobriety. And he'd say, honey, are you sure you don't need to be on medication? So here it is years later, and I'm working again with Mark. And he says, Mimi, come to my house. We're going to do an inventory. And I said, okay. And I showed up, and I thought, I know that this is going to help, but he doesn't understand how deep this pain is. And I showed up, and we did 4 through 9 in just a matter of hours. And when I left his apartment, it was gone. All these years of guilt and shame had left me. And once again, I realized that I live in a very square box, and my higher power is much bigger than that, and that I limit my higher power. And that's where I get into trouble, is in limiting my higher power, because I don't realize how much my higher power has to offer me. I'm going to tell you that today is the 10-year anniversary of my partner's sponsor's husband raping me. And that was 10 years ago this weekend. And today, I woke up this week and I thought, wow, I didn't know that was going to happen, that it was going to fall that way, the anniversary. And about 10 years ago, her sponsor and her husband were Mr. and Mrs. Alcoholics Anonymous. I know you know them. Every group has one. They've been sober a long time, lots of service. And I was staying with them temporarily in a transition. We were moving from one state to the next. And he raped me. And I ended up moving to Dallas, and it took a while for that to settle and for me to understand exactly what had happened. And I can tell you that this is how wonderful my higher power is that I had no anger or no animosity towards that man. Now, I don't know why, but my higher power just removed it. And the saddest part about that story is, to me, is that he had 25 years of sobriety, and he drank. He picked up a drink, and he didn't have to. All he had to do was work the steps. And so when I'm struggling and I don't know, I just think, Mimi, all you have to do is work the steps. And I, for many, many years in Alcoholics Anonymous, I struggled. And today I remember at 8 years of sobriety, I was sitting with a sponsor at a coffee table, at a coffee shop. We're having coffee. And I said, but it feels the same. I still feel like I have a year. I don't feel like anything's changed. And she said, Mimi, trust the process. Trust the process. You're changing. And I just felt like I was spinning my wheels and I wasn't getting anywhere. And so that's what I mean when I say, for me, recovery hasn't been linear. It hasn't been like 1, 2, 3, da, 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 you know, happy joy is for you, yay. It's been painful, and it's been hard. And I had to go back and I had to look at those things that I didn't want to look at from my past. And what that man did for me is he gave me a real gift. Because up until that time, I had turned my head to all of those things that had happened. all of those horrible things that happened as a child that I couldn't reconcile. So here I was, now I had to face it. And it's not that I hadn't written them down on an inventory and I hadn't found my part. My part was to deal with it, and I hadn't. Just like I hadn't dealt with the shame and the guilt with my mother, I had just put it aside in a box. Because that's what my disease does. It says, oh, if you don't have to, then why should you? You know, I didn't want to turn my will and my life over to the care of a higher power unless I had to. I mean, really? Like, why would I want to do that when I could just run my own life? But running my own life gets me in a lot of trouble. So I'm really grateful today that this has been a slow, painful process. It's had a lot of good, but it hasn't come easy, and I'm glad. I'm glad it hasn't come easy for me. I'm glad that I've struggled, because what the book talks about in the third step is that our serenity will match our calamity. And so I can tell you, at the lowest points I've had in my sobriety, when I said, I don't understand, God. I don't know where this fits. I don't know how this works. I don't know. I had someone tell me once, Mimi, why is not a spiritual question? When I'm there in the depths of my own limits of my own brain, and then I get through that, then it's like, wow, I'm that much closer to God. And my higher power presents himself or herself in a lot of really interesting ways. And the cool thing is, if I can just show up and not drink, then there's always a chance for me to see. If I can show up, not drink, and not kill myself, because I've known a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous who've died. I've known a whole lot of people who lived, though. And so those are the people that I watch, the people who are living and happy and smiling. And I watch them outside and I say, what are you doing? And most of them say, I'm working the steps. I'm meditating. So I have to keep showing up and meditating when I don't want to. I have to do those stupid inventories that my sponsor tells me to do, that I don't understand why I have to do them. And I don't see where I have a part. And I don't see all of those things. I just have to do it anyway. The book talks about that faith, we can't have faith without unselfish action, I think it says, something along those lines. I'm just paraphrasing. So I've got to do the work to get to this higher power. And I may not feel God. I don't always feel God. But I have to trust that my higher power is there and changing and growing. And people in early sobriety, I got sober at the Lambda Group in Dallas, and I'd have problems. I still have problems. And I'd walk up to these big, beautiful men, and they were so big and tall. And I'd say, I have this problem, XYZ. And they'd grab my hand. They'd say, Mimi, have you worked the steps? Yes. And they'd walk me to the wall, and the steps were there. And they'd say, pick one. Just pick one. Just do a step. And so for me, it's like I'm doing these steps. And while I'm doing them and taking the action, my higher power is like, she's out of the way, thank God. And he's working the magic, and he's changing my brain, and he's changing my heart. Because as my thinking changes, my heart changes, and then finally the two connect. And on a day when the two are connected, I have a really good day, you know. And I can look in your eyes, and I can smile, and I can laugh. I don't want to die. I wanted to die every day of sobriety, my first 10 years of sobriety. And I had done inventory after inventory, and I didn't understand. I said, God, there's got to be more to this than how I feel. But I just had to hang in there and trust the process. And so things have changed for me. You know, today I'm happy. I'm content. And I don't have all the money and all the women. I'm gay, in case you can't tell by looking at me. I have one woman, but she's wonderful. My wife Deborah, who's also sober, but I thought being sober was going to be about money, cars, women, and all these things. And it turns out it's about none of that. You know, I have a really small house, an old car, and not a lot of money. But I'm running my race, not anybody else's. And so I just get to show up in Alcoholics Anonymous and be. And it's a good day when I'm just sober. And I'm going to end with this story because I'm just about out of time. But when I got sober, I had about 9 months. And actually, let me tell you, backtrack a little bit. When my last drunk, September 16th, it was horrible, and I ended up in a blackout at an apartment of a friend's, and I had to walk home. And there used to be this counseling center at the corner of my street, and there was these two guys that would drink all the time, and they were drinking, and I sat down, and I started crying, and they said, why are you crying? And I said, you don't understand. I've been in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous for years, and I can't get sober. And they put down their beers, and they said, Alcoholics Anonymous is a fine organization. I said, really? And they said, I said, you don't understand. I don't get it. I can't get it. And they said, we can't get sober. And we said, what we do is we drink in meetings. I said, I drink in meetings. And so these guys 12-stepped me and they said, you know what you need to do? Yep. They said, you need to go home, you need to hit your knees, and you need to ask your higher power to keep you clean and sober. You tell God that you'll meet him halfway if he'll meet you the other half. So I went back home to that crap hole apartment covered in vomit and roaches with no furniture. And I got on my knees and I said, God, I will do my part if you just do the rest. I will meet you halfway if you just carry the load. And I went to a meeting. And for weeks, I would walk by those guys on the way to the coffee shop where I knew I could get a ride to a meeting. And they'd say, and I'd show them my chip. And they'd say, hey, Mimi, you going to your meetings? I was like, yeah, guys. I took my girlfriend by to meet them. And they're like, keep calling your sponsor. And then they ended up moving, or they moved on. And at about nine months of sobriety, I thought, you know, in 9 months, I really should have this deal by now. I don't understand why I haven't graduated, and it's too hard, and I'm going to drink. And I had $20, which was a lot of money for me. And I took a bus down to where I knew the bars were, and I saw these two homeless guys. And they were drinking, and I said, hey, I'm not old enough to buy alcohol yet, but there's a liquor store across the street. Can you, one of you, buy me alcohol, and I'll give you the change? And one of them jumped up, and he said, I'll do it. And the other one said, hold up, you're an AA? I said, yeah. He goes, AA is a fine organization. Why do you want to drink? You're so young. I said, you don't understand. I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous for 9 months, and I don't feel it. I don't feel it here. And he said, you just have to keep doing it. You just keep doing the deal. He said, I was in prison for 9 months. He said, I couldn't get sober. I couldn't stay sober. He said, you know what you need to do? What? He said, you need to go home, you need to hit your knees, and you need to ask God to keep you clean and sober. Yeah, so I took my $20 back. And I turned around and I walked, and a guy pulled up next to me, and he said, Mimi, do you want to ride to a meeting? I said, absolutely. So I went to a meeting and I got to stay sober. So that's how my higher power works, you know. That's how my higher power works. But I want to tell you, whenever I get the opportunity the privilege to speak, I always end with this reading out of the 12 and 12. It helped me during a really difficult time when I had about 10 years, and I didn't know how I was going to make it from one meeting to the next because I was busy playing God. But it's the bottom of page 104 in step 11, and it says, we discover that we do receive guidance for our lives to just about the extent that we stop making demands upon God to give it to us on order and on our terms. Almost any experienced AA will tell how his affairs have taken remarkable and unexpected turns for the better as he tried to improve his conscious contact with God. He will also report that out of every season of grief or suffering, when the hand of God seemed heavy or even unjust, new lessons for living were learned, new resources of courage were uncovered, and that finally, inescapably, the conviction came that God does move in a mysterious way his wonders to perform. Thank you so much.